Welcome to In Clear Terms with AARP California. Conversations on issues impacting Californians of all ages. Here's your host, Theon Gordon.
Welcome to In Clear Terms with AARP California. Join us as we dive into issues and policies that impact Californians of all ages, particularly older adults, and learn how you can connect with AARP to make our state more livable for all. I am an AARP volunteer and your host, Dr. Theon Gordon. Today, we're introducing AARP California's new state director, Michael Murray, and we'll dig into what AARP really does here in California, what's coming in 2026, and how you can get involved. Michael, how you doing there today?
Hey, Theon, doing really well. Glad to be here.
We are so happy to have you. Can you share a little more about yourself and your history with the organization and just tell us a little bit about you?
Sure, happy to. I'm really fortunate and actually I'm quite proud that last week I celebrated my 36th anniversary at AARP.
Wow.
I spent over 20 years of that in the national office in D.C. in different leadership roles. But I had the great fortune to come out to California 13 years ago. And I didn't want to leave. And I've been so glad to have had leadership roles overseeing strategic planning and operations and all of our campaigns over the years. And last June, I was very humbled to be selected as the state director for this amazing team of staff and volunteers who really care about what we do. And I think they really embody our mission as an organization to empower people to choose how they live as they age. It's quite a gift.
Well, Michael, thank you so much. We're so happy to have you as the new state director. And I have to tell you, it's a tribute also to succession planning with AARP. Sounds like you've moved up the ladder and now are the state director.
Thank you. Yes, I've had great opportunities. I'll say one of the wonderful aspects of the organization is that there are those opportunities. It's succession planning, but there are also paths to identify where you might want to put your energies and your passions and where you'd like to work and explore working. And I think it really is a testament to the many good things about this organization.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? It's been a while since we've talked about AARP's work on this show. So why don't you remind our listeners what exactly AARP does and how the organization came to be?
So I'll focus on, go back a little bit, how we came to be, and I'll keep it as short as possible. But I wanted to go back to when our founder, Dr. Ethel Percy Andrus, and she was the first female principal of a major urban high school right here in Los Angeles at Lincoln High. And she retired to become a caregiver for her mother. One day she was out to visit a former colleague, retired teacher. And when she got to where she was going, they said, go to the building in the back of the yard. It was literally a chicken coop. And what she learned from this former colleague is that she had to live in this refurbished chicken coop because of an inadequate pension that teachers had at the time. That became the fire that really energized Dr. Andrus to form what became the National Retired Teachers Association in 1947. And in that capacity, after a lot of hard work, she was successful in securing health insurance for teachers and lobbying on an ongoing basis how to deal with their inadequate pensions. Going ahead a couple of years, she was seeing what was happening with older adults in general. And this is before Medicare. So think about the 1950s.
Wow.
And her idea to begin an organization and found it right here in California, in Ojai, the American Association of Retired Persons, as it was known at that time. And I'll explain a little bit more about why it's no longer referred to that later in our conversation. But I think it's really a testament to someone who is visionary and someone who had enough passion to look out for others. She was the founder. She was the president. She was the first volunteer at AARP. She never took a paycheck. But she had vision, passion, commitment, and that's why we're here today.
Amazing. And it's always such a great story to hear the humble beginnings of how AARP was founded. You just mentioned the AARP change of names and everything. Tell me a little about that.
So what happened is the American Association of Retired Persons was appropriate and relevant at the time. It was a membership organization. Demographically, where people were when they were in their 50s and 60s and thinking about retirement. Fast forward, as we changed as a country, as a world, as aging changed, we realized that our members, the majority of them weren't retired. A large percentage are still working, need to work, have to work, want to work. And AARP officially became AARP, just the acronym, just the letters. It doesn't stand for anything any longer, although it's referred to on occasion still as American Association of Retired Persons, to better reflect that we're a trusted brand, that we'd been around for many years at the time we did that shift in our name, but that we also want to reflect the changing dynamics of growing older in our country and balancing trusted brand with who we are as an organization really was ideal, I think, for us. And it's been over 25 years, I believe, that that change occurred.
And I love that because it shows how the organization has evolved with the times and makes things appropriate for that. There's so many different truths or untruths that are going on now. Let's do a mini myth versus fact lightning round.
All right.
Kind of bust out some of those common misconceptions about AARP. My friends are afraid to join because they're like, that means we're going into the retirement club. And I'm like, no, that's not what it means. So let's do that. You ready to play?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. First one, is AARP only for retired people?
Absolutely not. You know, as I was mentioning, things changed over time, and AARP is for older adults. But really important to note is what we do for all. The issues that we work on around health and financial security impact everyone, regardless of your age. So we are definitely not just for retired people.
All right. AARP is not just for retired people. That's a myth. Does AARP support candidates and political parties?
Absolutely not. We are strictly a nonpartisan organization. We do not have never endorsed candidates or support political parties. And what we focus on are the issues. What are the relevant issues to the people that we represent, to their families, that can range from the work we do at the federal level to state and local level on health security issues, financial resilience, livable communities type work that we do, and really making sure that folks understand it is about the issue and not about the party or an individual.
All right. So there was another myth. AARP does not support candidates or political parties, but absolutely does advocacy around issues. So thank you for that. Let's try one more.
Okay.
Is AARP an insurance company?
No, we're not. But let me explain it this way. We're a big organization, and I can understand why some people say that we are, you know, do you sell insurance? I certainly get that question from time to time. There's a lot of visibility sometimes when you see ads or billboards that say X Insurance endorsed by AARP. But let me clarify it this way. There are different entities within the organization. There is a for-profit part of our organization that does manage those important relationships, including those who offer insurance offerings and other discounts that we offer. And those really are based on what are the needs and interests of people 50 and older, and how is that part of our organization and business changing the marketplace for how people think about aging. Where I sit in the state office and in the DC office, we're a 501c4, so we're nonprofit. And in that capacity, we focus on advocating, we can lobby, we're able to really make sure that we are representing not only just our members, but again, their families and all people, that we are looking at social impact and change and what that looks like. So I do understand because of visibility about why we're an insurance company, but there is an element of our organization that manages that. It's not what we do at the state or local level.
All right. Thank you for clarifying that. We're not an insurance company at AARP. I have one more. You have to be 65 and on Social Security in order to join AARP.
Absolutely not. Membership age is 50. And also, some folks don't realize this. It's always a good conversation point when you're at dinner sometimes and your spouse turns 50 and they get the letter and they join and their spouse says, well, I'm not 50 yet, so I'm not ready. If your spouse is 50 and a member, you yourself are also a member as well, regardless of your age. And in fact, we encourage younger people to engage with us and can become a member. They may not have the full benefits that older adults have as they are further in their membership, but they do have the benefit of the resources and the information and the lobbying that we do on their behalf that really helps them and their families.
All right. Thank you, Michael, for clearing up those myths. And everybody, come on, join. If you haven't joined AARP, it's time to get on board any age.
Absolutely.
At 50, you're a full member, but any age can join.
That's right.
Well, now I want to shift a little bit to AARP's work in the community. As a national organization, what does local work look like for AARP? You mentioned DC and you mentioned California. So what does it look like locally for AARP?
Sure. And I'll share a little context. We're a national organization for a long time. And again, it's been about 25 years or so when all of the state offices open up. So imagine we have a presence in every state, Puerto Rico, DC, the Virgin Islands. That's remarkable.
Absolutely.
Here in California, we are in Los Angeles, Sacramento, San Jose, and San Diego. We're a big state, right? And how do we manage what that looks like at the local level and where do we focus our efforts? We selected these major metro areas based on population and where we think we can have the most impact. It doesn't mean that we're not doing work outside of these areas, but it's where we put most of our resources, including staff and volunteers, and how we engage with communities. We are fortunate to have over 3 million members in California.
A lot.
It is a lot. And we want to make sure that we're representing their needs. And a lot of that happens at the local level. We do tremendous work at the state level on advocacy. At the local level, there is advocacy that we do, but it's also thinking through how can we best engage with the communities where people reside, where they know trusted partners, where we want to be their trusted partner, how we show up in ways at events, how we show up in ways at concerts, how we show up at ways for a series that we have called Movies for Grownups, how we advocate for them, big A and little A, is really important. And I think the key to a lot of the success at the local level is people need to know, one, that we're here. And I think we do a lot of work on that through our communications work. But probably underscoring all of that is that we must be and stay relevant to individuals. And as we become more sophisticated, how do we create that personalized experience with our members and anyone who engages with us at an event, an activity, wherever they may encounter AARP? I will say that local advocacy is still a tremendous opportunity for us. There's a lot happening at the federal level, the state level. When we think about where people probably hear the most about advocacy that may impact them directly or their families, it's likely at the local level. How are those issues being addressed on affordable housing, transportation issues, which we know we have in California? How do we think about how are parks and open spaces being relevant to not only older adults, but, you know, intergenerational families? How can we engage people who want to work and be part of this journey with us in a way that lets them be the voice for their community? I think our local advocacy is an area where we continue to build and grow and emphasize the importance of where not only our voice, but the voice of our members and those we're representing, their families, that they have a voice too.
Absolutely. Well, what does that look like in terms of in California? What issues would AARP work on? There's so many different community issues. And then why would AARP work on those issues versus any other ones? You mentioned transportation and housing, for example. So tell us some of the issues AARP works on and why.
Sure. And I'll also address the why simultaneously, Theon, because I think I'll ground it first in the why. Probably not a surprise, an organization like AARP, we do research. We want to understand what issues are top of mind, not only for our members, but for younger people as well. what data is out there that really shows where we may have the best opportunity to have an impact at the federal, state, or local level. And here in California, I did mention a couple of issues. I'll just touch base on the few ones I said before and a couple of others as well. But these are issues that are quote unquote pocketbook issues for so many because it impacts them in ways that allows them how they live their lives. I mentioned access to an affordable housing. How do we make sure that there are the best opportunities for people to invest in housing, whatever that may look like for their situation? Transportation. How are we ensuring that the transportation systems, the roads, the whole universe around that is thinking about what it means for an aging population? And actually, as you think about that, what it means in the context of what I've referred to earlier as livable communities. When you think about a crosswalk in a street, for example, and you think about that, you're standing there and the light comes on, you got 30 seconds to cross the street. Is 30 seconds enough for people of different ages? Can the parents with a child get across the street in 30 seconds? Can an older adult navigate that in 30 seconds? What does that look like to ensure that every aspect of our communities is thinking through a lens of what we call age-friendly communities and preparing for that experience that we all are having every day as we age in our communities? I also want to emphasize caregiving. We know this is just a huge, huge issue at the federal, state, and local level. And either you are a caregiver, you will be a caregiver, or you yourself will need care, is something that is top of mind, I think, for all of us. We all have a personal story around this. And we do a lot of work around advocating on the different programs that best help and support caregivers. And at the local level, there is an aspect of that from local advocacy, but also helping people think through preparing for caregiving. And we have a program called Prepare to Care. And things that we need to think about as individuals, either for ourselves or for our loved ones, as they are aging, and things that we can do to best help people navigate. Now, we don't have all the answers, and that's why partners are so key. And there are so many wonderful partners in this caregiving space and other issues that we work on. But we want to ensure that in all instances, the voice of older adults or those helping older adults is represented, and the needs and the pressures, particularly on caregivers, what that entails and how we can best support them. This next issue is just so unfortunate, becoming so prevalent, and that is fraud. Fraud in every aspect, I think, of our lives. And we have a tremendous fraud watch network that people can learn about on ARP.org. But I think what's really important, and even from an advocacy perspective and in our community education work, it's what are the issues? What are the situations people are encountering? Are there laws in place or need to be adapted to address the changing aspects of fraud? Cryptocurrency is a current one that's very top of mind, very scary for many. And how do we think about where we can best educate and or advocate on behalf of people who are hopefully not encountering specific fraud, but if they have, that they know where there are some resources that can guide them through their journey as they work through that? Another piece, and certainly very relevant in California, I'd like to call out, is our work on utilities. And we think about the cost of utilities and what that means for how we live, how people pay their bills, the challenge of living in an expensive state, balancing all of the needs. Utilities are a piece of that, cost of housing, et cetera. Where can we have the opportunity to elevate not only the concerns, but where can we make some changes to adapt to an environment that it was going to change as technology continues to evolve when we think about utilities and what all that will look like?
A lot of issues. That sounds like a lot of topics that AARP is working on. And I know that's not all of them. One of the things you mentioned in terms of sidewalks and mobility and things like that kind of reminds me of the aging landscape in California. What does that look like?
Yes. And, you know, I want to step back for a moment because this is really critical for everyone to understand. So everyone knows we're aging, as I said a minute ago. That's just part of life, right? Every day.
Yeah.
We stepped back a couple years ago in one of the gubernatorial elections. actually with Governor Newsom, where we really emphasized with candidates the importance of being prepared for an aging population. And out of that, because of that work and others, California now has in place a master plan for aging. AARP continues to have a voice in this effort, but tremendous efforts made by the governor and staff who are leading this work and many partners who are leading this work. But clearly, the population is growing. The aging population is growing. And I think what's probably so staggering, because numbers can really tell a story, is that in four short years, nearly 10 million Californians will be an older adult.
Wow.
So that's a quarter of the state's population, one quarter of the state's population. And what that means for every aspect of our lives is something that must be top of mind and cannot be ignored. So I think being mindful that this is upon us, being mindful of the great work that's happened, being mindful of how we need to continue this framework for a master plan for aging, and think through at the state and local levels what that means based on where you are situated in the state.
So what does that mean, Michael? How does that determine our priorities, for example? What are the top priorities with this type of aging community?
Well, I'll tell you, within the Master Plan for Aging, there are a couple that they align directly with our own data and research that AARP does, and some of the ones I've just mentioned. Caregiving is front and center. In addition to caregiving is how we are adjusting to a changing workforce and how workforce impacts almost every facet of work that happens across the state. For example, I'll stick with caregiving. We think about the number of caregivers, how they experience opportunities to perhaps grow in that profession. Are we prepared to ensure that there are opportunities for people to learn the skills that they need, to enhance skills that they may have, to do the work that they need to do to support themselves as a caregiver or those they care for? I think in the workforce more broadly, it's also the importance of understanding the value of an intergenerational workforce and how we can all learn from each other in the different generations. And what that's going to mean, I think, depending on whether you're private or public sector or nonprofit, whatever that looks like, is thinking through that lens of what is going to be happening or what is happening in our state, in our community. What is the work that we're doing, that we're responsible for? And where appropriate, are we thinking about the impact of what it means to age in this space? Does that make sense?
It does. And I think when you speak about that intergenerational, it kind of goes back to the evolution of AARP and how, instead of it being for American Association of Retired Persons, it became AARP. Because we are, as an aging population, we are still a part of this workforce. We are still a part of this economy. We're still such an important part, even though there's an aging landscape. It seems as though we're aging differently right now. And so as we think about normally a retirement age where people might be leaving the workforce or changing the things that they do, are you finding that more people are staying in the workforce and really a lot more active in the things that are happening in California?
Great, great point. Great question. I think what we're really understanding now about the data is that people are staying in the workforce for a couple of reasons, or coming back to the workforce. They want to work. They love the work, the passion about the work that they do. Some people have retired and realized that based on their current financial situation to make ends meet, that they need to go back to work and what that looks like. And then for those who are in the workforce, how can you continue to do the work that you're doing, but also be thinking, looking ahead and thinking about and talking with your employers, what will this look like for me? What opportunities will there be as I age? And while that's a personal decision, understanding, I think, a culture where inclusiveness is top of mind about, as I mentioned, the real power of an intergenerational workforce and what that can look like, again, across different businesses. But I think people really are adapting to their own situation based on perhaps the economy, based on a family situation, based on any number of experiences that may be prompting them to go back to work or stay in the workforce.
Absolutely. It's very interesting to see how we're aging in this particular part of the country and how this intergenerational aspect will bring us, I think, more together. As you talked about the caregivers, for example, I consider myself as one of the aging population people being over 60, but are we the ones who are doing the caregiving now, or are we equipping the younger generation to do the caregiving so that we can be cared for at some point? And I know there's some advocacy work going on around wages and things like that with caregiving. Anything else you can shed light on with that?
Well, you've touched on a really important point, because more and more, there's a growing number of younger people who are becoming caregivers. And I'll step back for a moment, because we were involved in a program that focused on Latino caregivers. And what we learned, and again, this is not unique just to the Latino population, but it's the passion and love you have for your family is what drives your caregiving. And you're not thinking necessarily about being paid. And what does that mean for the caregiving experience? And there are opportunities, of course, for paid caregivers as well. But what I want to mention is that we want to ensure that caregivers, no matter their age, understand where there are resources that can not only help them as the caregiver, but also to help those that they're taking care of. And it's really important for folks to know that they're not alone in this caregiving journey, and that there are wonderful organizations that can provide support and resources to help on with that entire experience. And I think back to the workforce piece is, for those who are interested in that type of career path, do we have in place what's needed for folks to get the training skills that they need at the level that they want to build their own professional path in that space?
How can our listeners get involved in any of these spaces and support the work that we're doing, especially the work that we're doing here in 2026? There's so much important work being done.
Thank you, Theon. And there are a couple of things I'd like to mention, and I know there'll be some information shared as well with the program. But I want to start off with our volunteers, and not just because I'm talking to one of the best, but I want to talk about the importance of our volunteers. As I mentioned, our founder was AARP's first volunteer, and we have had over 60 years of being enriched by people who care enough to devote their time to the issues that we work on. And becoming a volunteer can look different in different ways. So there are volunteers who want to engage with us at the community level, those who like to interact at cultural events, have fun and talk about what we're doing at different activities in communities, volunteers that work on our local and state advocacy, volunteers that also engage in our federal advocacy work and engage with members of Congress, volunteers who choose to share their stories about their experience and what that would look like for someone who might be interested in becoming a volunteer. People can go to aarp.org/volunteer to learn more. They can go to caaarp.org, californiaarp.org, to learn more. But I think it's really important to understand, we want to meet our volunteers where our volunteers want to leverage their passion and their expertise to the organization. It really is the backbone of what we do. And another way that is more indirect, that is maybe not volunteer role, but to get involved, is to become a mobile or email activist. And there'll be information that's shared on those sites that I referenced as well, where people can learn more to raise your hand, contact your elected official, give us permission to reach out to you again, that we need your help at the federal, state, or local level to raise your voice or the voice of your family and community on these issues that we've been talking about. And the power of being an activist is significant. And it really, I think, drives a lot of our success, not because of who we are as an organization, but because of the people that are representing us as an organization and what they care about on these topics.
This is wonderful. I love that. With aarp.org/volunteer, or emailing CA aarp.org. Great information. What I love most about these volunteer experiences, especially for mine, is actually being able to be home. And you talked about that email volunteer. So those are volunteer opportunities that you can do right from your own home. But I also had an opportunity this past summer to participate in an in-person AARP volunteer opportunity. I got to read in a Black History event. And it was just such a wonderful opportunity because I got to meet other AARP volunteers as we engaged together to make a difference in a community. And it was so much fun. Can you share a little bit more about volunteering in person with AARP and what those opportunities look like? I just shared about my one little opportunity where I got to read and use my voice and with some other people in presenting a play. Tell us about other opportunities and what they look like.
Sure. You know, one of the things that was so interesting during COVID, as all of our lives turned upside down, was what does a volunteer experience look like in this type of environment? And as we all pivoted to a digital platforms and the way we engage with each other, things like Zoom became so popular. And volunteers with technical background, experience, interest, or wanting to learn about it stepped up. And we have a team of volunteers that host, support our education webinars on some of the topics we've discussed, caregiving, also brain health, a range of issues, fun events that we have. And I think it's really cool that there's an environment that we're, again, meeting people what that looks like. And I do want to stress the importance of local advocacy volunteers and our state advocacy volunteers. And this is a group that tends to be and wants to be more engaged at that level, who's comfortable working with and talking with elected officials. And we're making sure that they've got the training and support that they need. And I think you mentioned something that's really so key, is that we want to be flexible and we want to make sure that volunteers have the full support that they need, including covering, when possible, travel and expenses as well. We want to make sure that our volunteers are always taken care of and that we recognize their contributions, not just in one-offs, but multiple times throughout the year.
And that's such a good thing. I know the volunteer coordinator that I normally work with, he's always getting on me because I always forget to put in for my travel or my time. I just am like, it's a form. I don't want to fill out a form. But AARP really does take care of the volunteers. And it's such a rewarding experience to meet other people and engage. I really just appreciate it so much. So if you haven't volunteered with AARP, you may want to check it out. Okay, Michael, we're coming down to the end of this, but I wanted to just ask you, we've talked about so many different things. So I'm going to give you a little tough one here. I just told you I don't like doing forms and quizzes, so I'm going to give you one.
Okay.
If I could ask you to finish this sentence, AARP is for people who?
People who care, people who want to engage, people who want to have a voice on the issues that matter to them and their families, people who care about what their experience or the experience of their children, grandchildren will be when it comes to aging. People who care about looking ahead and people who care about how they can contribute to ensuring we all stick together on this journey of aging, and people who care about finding solutions and helping to elevate those in ways that are meaningful and something that is not just a piece of legislation or an event, but something that they can walk away with and say, this is tangible. I had a role in that. AARP had a role in that. And I'm grateful.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's great. That's fantastic. And I believe AARP is all of that and more. Michael, thank you so much for joining us on In Clear Terms, California. Do you have anything else you'd like to share before we close out today's interview?
Theon, just a huge thank you to you. This is a wonderful platform that allows us to share experiences and really bring to light issues that matter most. And thanks to your leadership and your ability to engage with whomever's sitting in this chair, that we're able to kind of tell the story of what we're doing and the impact that we're having. So lots of gratitude for you.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you. And again, thanks for joining the show. That's it for today's episode of In Clear Terms with AARP California. Today, you met Michael Murray, AARP California's state director. To learn more about AARP's work in California and how to get involved, visit aarp.org/CA. Thank you for listening.